The continents that European sailors reached in the late 15th century had a history the interlopers either largely ignored or tried to obliterate. The residents of the Americas were the world's most successful plant breeders. They had developed vegetable crops more nutritious and productive than those grown in Europe, Asia, or Africa. They had invented systems of writing and mathematics, and created calendars as accurate as those used on the other side of the Atlantic. But they had discovered neither the arch nor the wheel. Societies in the Americas both warred and traded with one another, and as in the other continents, empires rose and fell as rulers succeeded or failed to expand their powers. Scholars have long believed that all the earliest inhabitants of the Americas crossed a land bridge called Beringia at the site of the Bering Strait, approximately 12,000 to 14,000 years ago. Yet striking new archaeological discoveries in both North and South America suggest that some parts of the Americas may have been settled much earlier. But when approximately 10,000 years ago the climate warmed, the last ice age glaciers melted, and sea levels rose, Americans were separated from the peoples living in Asia, Africa, and Europe. At first, the residents of the Americas were nomadic hunters of game and gatherers of wild plants. But about 9,000 years ago, the people living in what is now central Mexico began to cultivate food crops, especially maize, which we call corn, squash, beans, and peppers. In the Andes Mountains of South America, other folk started to grow potatoes. As knowledge of agricultural techniques improved and spread through the Americas, vegetables and maize proved a more reliable source of food than hunting and gathering. Except for those living in the harshest climates, most Americans started to adopt a more sedentary style of life so they could tend fields regularly. Some established permanent settlements. Others moved several times a year among fixed sites. They became adept at clearing forests through the use of controlled burning. The fires not only cleared land by killing trees and fertilized the soil with ashes, they also opened meadows that attracted deer and other wildlife. Wherever agriculture dominated the economy, complex civilizations flourished. Such societies, assured of steady supplies of grains and vegetables, no longer had to devote all their energies to subsistence. Instead, they were able to accumulate wealth, produce ornamental objects, trade with other groups, and create elaborate rituals and ceremonies. In North America, the successful cultivation of nutritious crops such as maize, beans, and squash seems to have led to the growth and development of all the major civilizations. First, the large city-states of Mesoamerica, that is, modern Mexico and Guatemala, and then the urban clusters known collectively as the Mississippian culture and located in the present-day United States. Each of these societies, many historians and archaeologists now believed, reached its height of population and influence only after achieving success in agriculture. Each later declined and collapsed after reaching the limits of its food supply, with dire political and military consequences. About 2,000 years ago, the Mayan civilization developed on the Yucatan Peninsula in today's eastern Mexico. The Mayas built large urban centers containing tall pyramids and temples with brightly painted, stuccoed, and carved facades. They studied astronomy, created the first writing system in the Americas, and developed a ritually symbolic religious life in which rituals of bloodletting played a major role. By the 5th century, the kings of the Mayan city-states started to war with each other, attempting conquest on a grand scale. But no king or city could win total victory. Eventually, the constant fighting combined with an inadequate food supply to cause the collapse of the most powerful cities, ending the classic era of Mayan civilization by the year 900. By the time Spaniards arrived 500 years later, only a few remnants of the once mighty society remained. Another major Mesoamerican culture in the 5th century centered in the Valley of Mexico at the city called Teotihuacan, which was one of the most heavily populated urban areas in the world at the time. The rulers of Teotihuacan gained their position chiefly through commerce. Their trading network extended hundreds of miles in all directions. Thousands of craftspeople lived in the city, many especially skilled in working the green glass called obsidian, which was valued throughout the region as a source of fine knives and mirrors. Teotihuacan also served as a religious center. Pilgrims must have come long distances to visit the impressive Pyramid of the Sun, Pyramid of the Moon, and the great temple of Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, the primary god of central Mexico. Teotihuacan's influence was so widely felt in Mesoamerica before its decline in the 8th century that some scholars have argued that this Mexican city-state also influenced societies farther north in what is now the United States. There is no evidence, though, that Teotihuacan influenced such early North American civilizations as the Mound Builders in the Ohio Valley or the Anasazi in New Mexico and Arizona. A better case can be made for Teotihuacan's impact on the development of the Mississippian culture, which flourished around the year 1000 in what is now the Midwestern and Southeastern United States. The largest of the urban centers was the City of the Sun, now called Cahokia, near modern St. Louis. At its peak in the 12th century, the City of the Sun covered more than 5 square miles and had a population of about 20,000, small by Mesoamerican standards, but larger than any other northern community. Like Teotihuacan, Cahokia was a religious and trading center. Its main pyramid, today called Monk's Mound, was at the time of its construction the third largest structure of any description in the Western Hemisphere. It remains the largest earthwork ever built anywhere in the Americas. All of these American civilizations had either disappeared or were in decline by the end of the European 15th century when Columbus reached the Bahamas. Columbus's Spanish successors instead encountered the Aztecs, who migrated from the north into the Valley of Mexico during the 12th century. The uninhabited ruins of Teotihuacan, which by then had been deserted for at least 200 years, awed and mystified the migrants. The Aztecs' primary god, Huitzilopochtli, was a god of war represented by an eagle. Aztec chronicles record that Huitzilopochtli directed the Aztecs to establish their capital at the spot on an island where they saw an eagle eating a serpent, thus symbolizing Huitzilopochtli's triumph over Quetzalcoatl. That island city became Tenochtitlan, the center of a rigidly stratified society composed of hereditary classes of warriors, merchants, priests, common folk, and slaves. The Aztecs believed that they lived in the age of the fifth sun. 4 times previously, they wrote, the earth and all the people who lived on it had been destroyed. They predicted that their own world would end in earthquakes and hunger. In the Aztec year 13 Flint, volcanoes erupted, sickness and hunger spread, wild beasts attacked children, and an eclipse of the sun darkened the sky. Did some priest wonder whether the fifth sun was approaching its end? In time, the Aztecs learned that 13 Flint was called 1492 by the Europeans. By that same momentous year, the residents of the North American continent had developed a great diversity of cultures. I will focus here on those native peoples who lived along the North Atlantic coast, because they first met the European explorers and thus were the primary initial participants in the Columbian encounter. But if you follow the links in the websites listed at the end of this section, you will be able to learn about many other Indian groups in the Americas, both past and present. The native peoples of the eastern coastal regions are commonly referred to by the collective term Algonquian, the name of the language group to which they all belong. Others with similar cultures who lived farther inland were Iroquoians and Muscogeans. Most of the eastern Indian villages were surrounded by wood palisades and ditches to end in fending off attackers. Muscogeans and southern Algonquians lived in large houses made of thatch. while the similarly large dwellings of northern Algonquians and Iroquoians were more likely to be covered with bark or animal skins. Such structures housed extended families defined matrilineally, that is, through a female line of descent. Mothers, their married daughters, and their daughters' husbands and children all lived together. Matrilineal descent did not imply matriarchy or the wielding of power by women, but rather served as a means of reckoning kinship. Extended families were linked into clans defined by matrilineal ties. These societies allocated most agricultural chores to women. Men cleared the land and hunted game. Women also gathered wild foods, prepared food for consumption or storage, and cared for children. Political structures varied considerably. Among Muscogean peoples, the village council, composed of 10 to 30 men, was the highest political authority. No government structure connected different villages. The Iroquois, by contrast, had an elaborate political hierarchy incorporating villages into nations and nations into a confederation. A council comprising representatives from each nation made crucial decisions of war and peace for the entire confederacy. Yet in all the North American cultures, political power was divided between civil and war leaders, who wielded authority only so long as they retained the confidence of the people. European-style autocratic rule was unusual, and women could acquire political power. Female sachems, or rulers, led Algonquian villages in what is now Massachusetts. Iroquois women did not become chiefs, yet clan matrons nevertheless exercised authority. The older women of each village chose its chief and could either start wars by calling for the capture of prisoners to replace dead relatives, or stop wars by refusing to supply warriors with necessary foodstuffs. Before I discuss the impact of the Columbian encounter on these residents of the Americas, you might wish to visit some of the websites listed here for more information on the history and culture of Native Americans.